Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of CPA Review and More. We are pleased to bring you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you'd like to learn more about how Yeager CPA Review can help you, find us on our website at YeagerCPAReview.com. Now, here's your host, Phil Yeager.
This is Phil Yeager, and welcome to CPA Review and More. CPA Review is that we do cover areas of CPA Review because I own the Yeager CPA Review course. And the more means that we do more than just talk about CPA Review. We have other guests who are in different areas of accounting or sort of like advisory services type thing, whether it's a Bitcoin type thing, we talk about that. And if you go to our library, you'll see all the podcasts that we have done, okay? So anyway, today, enough, it's Ken Healy. Ken is a CPA, and his firm, is it called Diversified Financial Solutions?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just curious, why don't you call yourself Ken Healy, Certified Public Accountants?
Oh, the firm was started in 1949. It started as Fitzpatrick & Company. It was named after the owners. And at a point, they had shifted and gotten into financial services, and they kind of shifted out. But I don't know, we kind of go against the names. It seems like people change over the years, new people come in, and it should say Diversified Financial Solutions Certified Public Accountants, but that's probably too many words. But we chose not to go anymore with the last names.
So you bought this practice from this group, this other company?
I bought in. There was an owner, and he retired and is deceased. His son took it over. And he joined a partner about 10 years ago, and then I joined last year as a partner. So there's three of us currently.
So his son is still involved?
Yep.
Is it equal? What type of entity are you? A PC, okay?
Yep.
You don't see that too often, PCs anymore.
Yeah, I think it started as a C Corp, and then it eventually converted to an S Corp when that was allowed, and in Connecticut was a professional corporation.
Let me go back to my original question. Are each of the partners equal partners?
It's 50-25-25.
So who's the son of the original owner? Is it 50%?
He's down to 25. He sold me half of what he had. He has sold half before to Janet Walker. She owes 50%. Paul Fitzpatrick, whose father started the practice in 1949, he's down to 25%. And now I'm buying in at a 25% value.
All right, so the majority partner is who?
Janet Walker, CPA.
And does Janet make the final decisions, or do you equally make decisions?
Let's say we equally make it. We're usually all on the same page, which makes it easier, but we're trying to do a transition. So Paul's down to, in the summer, he does about 3 days a week. And Janet, I think, will be shortly following his lead and going down to 4 days when it's not tax season. So I think that's what their goal is.
What is the goal, to eventually retire totally or stay in the business?
Paul will never retire. Janet might. Paul just loves it. He owns some real estate. We own some real estate together. I think he'll work until the day he dies. Janet, I think she's still in it really heavy now and working a lot. But I think she'll take some time off. And I hope she gets to retire fully, enjoy herself. And I know she likes to spend time in Florida and she's got some kids. So hopefully she could pursue that too. She started working a little bit later in life, and I know she's worked really hard for a long time. So hopefully she could find that balance and enjoy herself. I hope they stay forever, but we'll see how long they want to work. They've been holding the reins for a while, and I think they want opportunities for other people to step up. So I'm glad they gave me the opportunity. And I hope, you know, with small firms, it's different. You just can't go on the New York Stock Exchange and sell your 50% interest in Diversified Financial. So there's a whole transition. We have to find people that want to buy in. We have to keep the firm going at the rate we're going and the growth. So it's not as simple as just I'm done today. So hopefully we come up with a great plan for them, and they like it, and that we're able to keep it to the level that they brought our company.
Now, you've had growth every year as far as a number of, as far as revenues, clients, that type of thing?
Yeah, we have. It's grown tremendously over the last 10 or 20 years. And that's always the hard part of the five CPAs. One's in his 70s, one is in his 60s, one's in his 50s. So there's another CPA who's in her 30s, and I'm in my 30s, but they've set the bar high. And that gets into the whole discussion about the CPAs. A lot of them are retiring. There's not a lot of young ones coming in. So it's interesting to find a transition, and hopefully we could do it organically and not have to sell to another company. Just keep the growth and reward the people that work with us and give them those opportunities and let them get in when it's the right time for them as well.
The number of people taking the CPA exam has dropped and it keeps dropping. All right. Is that affecting you as far as finding CPAs to possibly buy in or whatever?
Yeah, just talent in general. It seems like it's a smaller pool. There's a big divide between the CPAs that are in practice that own businesses and the younger ones, at least in small practices, at least in Connecticut. I know I've been in some discussions. They talk about replacing the agent fleet. That's a CPA practice advisor term, but I think it's correct. And I think the field is changing tremendously. I mean, the amount of technology and the change, Tax Cut and Job Act 2017, that changed the tax laws from 2018 to 2025, COVID, the PPP, the EIDL, the employee retention credit, that I think that's pushed a lot of people that are older to retire a little bit sooner than maybe they wanted to. But I know typically for our tax appointments, people come in every hour and the CPAs meet with them and prepare their tax returns. And last year we had the door shut. They had to drop things off. We would call them, we would Zoom. We would do things through our portal, much stronger than we had ever done in the past. And I understand people that are close to retirement age just saying, this isn't for me. I get it. They put their time in. And when they started, they were doing things pen and paper. And I can't even imagine doing it that way. They're obviously much better than I am. They have calculators and they do those very quickly. But it's a huge opportunity. And I think more CPAs will be joining or people will be looking to take it. But it is a lot of work. I know schooling right now is a big challenge. You're doing things remotely. And we're seeing it's getting harder. The people that are coming out in CPAs, they're in very high demand. And a lot of them start with a bigger company, and that's great. But in small businesses, a lot of times, if you do go to Root, you work for Big Four, you're working with clients that maybe are on a publicly traded, and none of my clients are. So the sooner you get into a small business, the growth is just tremendous. Big Four, I mean, tremendous opportunity. Great to have on your resume, great to do. But the small businesses, when I was getting out of school, I started with my firm when I was 16. So I've been down 37. I've been there 21 years. And they said, listen, you know, you have a Big Four offer. That's great if you want to do that, if you want to get on your resume. But if you want to come here, the sooner you get in here, the sooner you start working with the clients, the sooner you gain experience, the sooner you can see the whole picture, the more valuable you're going to be. And I really thought that that's what I wanted to do. So it'll be interesting. It's hard. I know it's very hard for the people that are looking to retire. Not only do I want to honestly sell their practice and get the retirement fund, but they want to take care of their clients. They've had relationships, clients, 20, 30 years. They want to make sure that they're properly taken care of and they're in good hands. And that's a big part of it is having relationships with your employees, having relationships with your clients, and making sure everybody's comfortable and it will continue in that fashion.
Why do you think people are not taking the CPA exam? Any thoughts on that?
I've seen different charts and there's a whole myriad of reasons and I don't know. I know the exam's adapting. It seems like it's more relevant to the change of the CPA. I know when I hear things, there's two and you had to get a minimum of 50 on all of them or else you couldn't keep your scores. Now it's, I think Connecticut, I just saw an email, there's no more blackout period. You could take them every month. There's no more off grading. We're one of the last two states to do that.
But do you have a definite reason? I mean, do you go to any Connecticut Society meetings? And if you do they discuss dropping?
They do, and it's just people in the profession as well. I don't know. I can't put my finger on the pulse of why people aren't doing it, because I know people still are doing it. To me, it's just a missed opportunity. And I don't know. I haven't seen on the other end from the students or the recent graduates why they're not doing it, what the obstacles are. I know from my experience, the sooner you do it, the better, you know?
Well, a lot of them don't want to go for the 150 hours. That's one thing. That's been a big turnoff, and although I'm not sure the ICPA has admitted it, but that was a terrible thing to come up with. Many of the universities lobbied, for example, in Maryland, University of Maryland lobbied the chairman of the department to get this requirement of 150 hours because they were starting a master's program. And they figured, hey, this would increase the people in the master's program. And it completely backfired on them. So that master's program did not increase the way they expected. I think it's the generation that's coming out, you know, of college that, you know, they look at public accounting. And that's another thing, you know, the experience requirement mainly is either working in public accounting actually working in a company where you're working under a CPA.
Sure.
Who can verify, you know, say, hey, he's got good experience. All right. The whole thing is, a lot of people, I would think, all right, they don't want to work in public accounting, this generation, because they don't want to put in the hours. I mean, you probably put in a phenomenal amount of hours, right?
Sure. And at least being on the small business side, that's probably definitely a drawback. If we're on the tax side, we don't do auditing, but there's 10 weeks where we probably make half of our money. So right. Honestly, and when we come out of tax season, we have a good gauge of how the rest of the year is going to be. And luckily this year we're able to, for doing all the hours, we get Fridays off between Memorial Day and Labor Day. So no job is perfect. And this is the career we chose and the profession we chose. It's how things are. You know, last year they gave us till July 15th to finish tax returns. It was okay because of COVID and everything else, but it really wasn't great doing tax returns in the summer, thinking about how I'd rather be at the beach at this point. This year they gave us to May. It seemed like a great idea in April. And I understand that they had to do it. They changed some of the rules in March retroactively, which was fine. Their heart was in the right place. I get it. But even in May, a lot of things get pushed off at small businesses till after tax season, unless it's really urgent to meet after tax season. Now we're at June. We've had a very short window to pick up after tax season goes. You get a week to decompress. And now there's a lot of big things that we've had to put off, despite anything else. So it's been a challenge. So we're saying we're going to do Fridays off this summer. We weren't able to do it last summer because of COVID, but it is a lot of hard work during tax season. But 10 weeks, if we could get through it, there's a lot of benefits. Now that I'm getting older, it gets a little bit harder. And again, a lot of opportunities for some young people, but
excuse me, how old are you again?
I'm going to be 38 next week.
And you think as we get older, you're a young guy. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm married. We're expecting a kid in December. It'll be our first.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I just see some challenges with that. You know, luckily now we typically don't work from home, but now we have a home office set up. I'm working from home today on a Friday when we're supposed to be off, which is great. I love catching up on things, but now it looks like there could be some balance. My wife works full time, and now during tax season, maybe I could come home, have dinner with them, and then hook up to my home office and review some tax returns for a couple hours before I go to bed. So there's definitely some advantages to where we are, but regardless, I mean, we make our money. It's just how hard you work, how many billable hours you and your firm do. I know there's value billing, but at the end of the day, it still comes down to how much work you're able to do. And during those 10 weeks, that's probably half our money comes in during those 10 weeks.
Do you have any regrets becoming an accountant, CPA? When did you decide that? And why did you pick a CPA as a profession?
I took an accounting course when I was a junior in high school, and I really liked it. And my father said, you know, it's a great career. He says, I know someone in town that owns an accounting firm. Maybe you could ask him if he needs an intern for the summer and see if you like it. Check it out. See what he does. See if it makes sense or not. And I got hooked. I was working for a summer in high school. I saw the relationships that the owner, Paul, has with his clients. I saw his work-life balance. I saw how much he was able to impact the community, does a lot of volunteer work. Same with everybody at our firm. And I thought it was great. So I started when I was in high school. I've been there ever since. I thought for me, it made a lot of sense. I knew at that time accounting, it'd be 5 years before he could be a CPA. And I said, before I commit to that, let me make sure I like it. And I was glad I did. And that really gave me the bug that this is something I want to do and pursued it. So I don't have regrets. I'm sure the first couple weeks in April, I said, why do I do this? But once we get through it, it's always worth it. It's nice because it does, as being an owner, it does set us up well for the rest of the year to know how hard we have to push to be where we need to be. I like that it gives us, I think accounting in general, if you're an accountant, whether you're CPA or not, you have a background that a lot of people don't have and expertise in a lot of areas people really struggle with, whether we know that or not. I think we take a lot of things for granted that we know. There's a lot you could do for your community to serve on charities and on boards and help them in different respects. They're really grateful. And it's really not that much work to us sometimes. It's a really hard gap for people to fill if they don't have those connections. And just the clients I have with my relationship, if I could save a client a little bit of money on their tax return and help their business, I might run into them two or three times during the course of the week, just walking down the street. They'll come over and thank me. They'll thank my wife. I mean, I can't even disclose who my clients are, but hey, Ken helped us. We weren't sure about doing something, but we did. And it made sense and it helped. And it means a lot. And to hear those stories, I mean, it's great. I mean, you have to love what you do. At the end of the day, you spend more time at work than you do at home with your family. And you have to be passionate about getting up and going to work. And if you have a job you like, no job's perfect. Not every day is great. But if more days you're excited to go to work than you're not, that's exciting. And the changes, the tax laws, a lot of the things have been hard the last couple of years. And it's been very hard for small businesses to navigate. The rules have changed. But the heart's always been in the right place. A lot of these rules come from Congress, and they're not accountants. They try their best, but sometimes when it's passed, it's not exactly, the I's aren't dotted and T's aren't crossed. But if the PPP, it gives money for small businesses that are struggling or closed to pay their employees, and then they looked at it and they only had 8 weeks to spend it. Most of them didn't. They went back and changed it to 24 weeks. Yeah, that was a lot of work on our end. But at the end of the day, those loans weren't meant to be repaid. Those loans were meant to be forgiven. And that made a lot of our companies whole for a year and kept them in business. So when you remember at the end of the day, during tax season, when you're up late trying to figure these things out and you're making calls and you're checking with the banks, you're checking with the clients if people need this money, then when you get through it and you see that made the difference for them staying in and keeping people employed and keeping their business going. I mean, a lot of small businesses are really fragile right now. A lot of industries aren't really doing that well. They're coming back, but without that, they wouldn't have done it. And their accountant, we're on their speed dial. I mean, they need this. They're up at night worried about whether or not they stay in business. They've been open 20, 30 years. So to see times like that and to help people navigate, I mean, these 2 years could have been the only time in my life we're stuck in a situation like that. I really hope that we never have a pandemic. But to be able to help people with that magnitude and that many people, it was really gratifying. And our team really stepped up. And all the programs out there, they were great. So it was nice that when you get to the summer and you get to rest, take that Friday off and say, you know what, it was worth it. And we were able to help. And a lot of people weren't. And we were getting calls, hey, our accountant, he's kind of retired. He's working from home. They have some concerns about being in the office. They're not really technologically set up. Could you help? It's like, yeah, you know what, we'll help because I know you need the help. And your accountant, chances are you're going to have them for the next 20 or 30 years. You don't change that every year. This isn't like price shop. And once you have that relationship and once you do something for that, that'll be your client for life at the end of the day.
Your clients don't nickel and dime you about fees do you have a deal with that with smaller businesses?
Sure. You know, we try to establish our value and I think our pricing is fair. So I understand that they want to do that, but I think long-term when you explain the tax savings and you're able to do a couple things, you know, it's not like most of my clients say, you're going to switch to me, I'm going to save you $50,000. But there's two or three little screws we could turn. We'll save a couple hundred bucks there and a couple thousand dollars there. If you do that for 10 or 20 years, you're going to be in a good situation. What are your goals? You know, oh, we want to buy a business. We want to buy equipment. We want to expand. We want to hire someone. We need a second location. I don't know if I could do it. Well, what loans do you have? What are your rates? Maybe we could talk to someone and get a better rate. Maybe we could refinance that. Things they don't even think of. So when you have the relationship and you're able to do that a couple times, I think they appreciate that. What are you saying for retirement? What type of retirement plan do you have for your company? You know, in 10 years, do you want to be out? Do you want to be retired? Do you want to be on a beach somewhere? Let's set up a plan to do that. Let's make sure you're putting enough aside. You need your kids going to college. What's that going to look like? You're going to hire someone. So how much do you need to cut to be able to do that? And how much is your business going to be growing? At what point will it start to take off at that? So I think if we could justify our fees, I think they understand. Accounting, you have to have your taxes done somewhere. But if you have a relationship, you have someone you can deal with a couple times a year and meet with and explain things and see what their vision is and help guide them and get them there, I think they're a little bit more willing to pay the fees, especially if you're priced accordingly and priced fairly in your area.
How do you charge for tax returns? Do you charge a flat amount or an hourly rate?
It's a flat amount, but it's based on hours. So there's a set fee. And then depending on the complexity of the return, not how much money you make, but the complexity. People that make $1 million, but it's just a W-2. They work for someone. It doesn't really take me that much longer than somebody else that has a job and works and makes half that much or a quarter of that. So if we could get the return done in an hour, then we charge them our base fee. But if they have a business, if they have three rental properties, if we have to do some projections, or if they're thinking about selling stock, or they have stock options, then it might be an extra hour of my time and I have to charge them accordingly for that. So depending on the complexity of their business, how many rental properties, how many broker statements, but it's not really the numbers. It's basically based on how many hours it takes us. And that's built into the fee. So most of them are pretty flat. Most people year to year, other than business owners, have a similar tax return. Usually if you're married and you have a job and you have a kid, chances are the next 5 or 10 years, you're going to be at the same job for most people, not everybody. And once you retire and you have Social Security and an IRA and a pension, chances are for the next 5 or 10 years, you're probably going to have that Social Security and that pension and that IRA. So we pretty much know what it'll be. And if we discuss things a few times during the year, we might have to charge them for some planning or projections. But that comes up at that time. And then they're glad because if they discuss before they take money out of an IRA or before they sell stock, then we know exactly what the tax implications are going to be. We could plan accordingly. When they don't tell us, we do their tax return in March and April, and if they're not prepared, that's bad for everybody. So we try to have that relationship, and we try not to make them feel like every time they call us, we're just going to send them a bill, that we're all doing things. A quick call, we're not going to charge, but if you have to do a couple scenarios, and if you're talking about, am I going to retire at 60 or 62 or 65, and we have to talk about some scenarios, that might charge an hour or two, but then it'll help decide you on your retirement. So hopefully then it all makes sense for people.
You talk to your clients once a year at least. At the end of, as you're getting towards the end of the year, do you call them up? Do you contact them and say you'd like to have an hour with them just to discuss things? Do you do that? Or do you wait for them to come to you?
It depends. So we have a lot of clients. So a lot of our businesses, we're talking to almost quarterly. Business owners, they don't have money taken out. They usually aren't on payroll. They pay estimates depending on how much their business makes. So every quarter, it's nice to have a little chat, discussion. I always tell my business owners, we want to talk in November or December. Once the year ends, your tax is pretty much your tax. But if you come to me in November, December, you're having a great year. We could have some tax planning techniques. We could talk about buying some new equipment or having some additional purchases for some write-offs. Maybe you need some a new computer. You're replacing your computers every 3 years, or you need some new trucks for your business. You have 10 and you're going to replace two, but maybe you want to do a third this year because rates are low and because you're going to have a big tax bill. Your tax savings is going to be significant. For the individuals, most of them, it varies. Some mail us their stuff or send it in or send it to our portal, and we do our return and call them after when it's done and tell them how things went. Some of them, when it's not COVID, come in and we have those meetings. And then we have the relationship that if things change during the year, they call us, they let us know what's going on. We had a kid, we moved, we sold our house, we're thinking about doing that. So on the individuals, it's more that they were going to reach out. You know, some of them we just see in our normal day-to-day life. We're in different activities or we see them through just doing life. Our businesses, though, we try to make sure to touch base quarterly. You know, sometimes they're smaller and they hit a certain growth. And if they're typically making $75,000, if nothing changes, they kind of have gotten to that point. They know it. They know what their estimates are. We still like to check in. But usually if something's amiss, if they're making a lot of money, they tend to know. Or if they're down a little bit, they tend to know. And they usually reach out to me before I get a chance to reach out to them and say, hey, we're having a good year. We really should talk. Those are great calls to have. Or struggling a little bit, why don't we come in and see? Maybe I could pay a little bit less in taxes and we could talk about what the problem is with their business.
For the people who are watching or listening to this, I'll tell you what I've gotten out of it so far. All right. That, yes, you want to make a living, a good living, but what you enjoy most is helping people, because the people then come up to you and they say, thank you. You've helped me tremendously. And all right. And that seems to mean a lot to you. Is that, what would you say is more important to you as far as making more money, or do you enjoy helping people? Which one would you say actually describes you as a person?
You know, we all need to make a living. You know, we're blessed that our field pays well, I think, and for the amount of work we do. But helping people, I had a call yesterday. Someone from, he goes to church with me, and him and his wife were having trouble deciding when to turn on Social Security. I said, call me at 6. Hours are closed. Clock's off. I want to help you. Spent an hour. He's helped me in different ways. And we discussed the different scenarios. We did some tax projections. We talked about what was in their retirement. We talked about what they're earning. We talked about what their goals were, what their debt was. I came out of that meeting with the biggest smile. He did more for me than I did for him, without a doubt, because I know he didn't have a relationship with an accountant. He has a simple tax return. He does it on his own. He's more than capable of doing it. But who do you turn to? He has a financial advisor. He sees some tools online, but he doesn't have that trusted friend, that accountant, that someone that said, listen, you call me. And I said, listen, if things change a year from now, even though you said you're going to work till you're 70, if you decide next year you can't, or your company gets sold, or your boss is a jerk, whatever, you call me. We'll rerun these scenarios. No problem. So I find that rewarding. You know, there's only a few times in life, if you're an individual, you don't own a business, you might need help. But if I can help you during that time, if you have a baby, if you're not sure about buying a house, if you talk about refinancing, all those things, any of those little things, it does make a difference. I know you can go anywhere to have your taxes done, but when you have that relationship, you're going to have a friend, you're going to have a colleague, you're going to have an advisor that's looking out for your best interest. If I do family, if I do friends, if I do just anyone I know, I've done them 10 or 20 years. I mean, we've had times, I had somebody, he worked with my father and I started doing his return and he had basically worthless stock and he was about to retire in a couple of years. I said, you need to sell this now. I said, we could take $3,000 of losses every year to offset your income. When you retire, you're going to have like no taxable income. Let's sell them. It's worth nothing. It's not going to change. We know that. The company closed a long time ago. It's barely worth anything. Sell them. Let's use those losses for the next 3 years. I tell you, he sends me a gift every year for Christmas. It's like, please don't bother. I'm glad to. That's your losses, you know?
That is very nice.
So, So people just don't know these things. And to us, we just take it for granted because we just see hundreds and hundreds of returns every year. And we talk to people and people have different levels of education with finances. I mean, you know, I'm fortunate. I hear a lot of people, they hate taxes and they hate going to the doctor. It's like the two worst things. Some people, they like shake coming into the office. It's not their thing. They hate it. They get upset. They hate to owe money. And if the refunds are down, that was going to be either the vacation money or pay off some medical bills. So I enjoy taking the time to just do some quick planning. Or at a new job, you want to make sure you get back a couple grand at the end of the year to do something with your family. That's important to me too, you know?
The gentleman in your church, he has a financial advisor, okay? What does that financial advisor do for him?
Manage his investments. But when it comes to tax planning, they know the basics, and they had them in a lot of Roth IRAs and different things, which are great. But how exactly it works and how to determine what the tax will be with those RMDs that it's probably going to generate in a few years, and when to tap the Roth and when to tap the traditional IRA, they know the basics. But to really get numbers down, that makes a big difference.
Are they, was this a certified financial planner or just a person that says he's a,
I didn't get into it. He seemed to be happy with the advisor, and he told me what the balances were. So we need to know that to calculate what his RMDs were going to be in the future. But, you know, if people have relationships who try not to rock the boat, if they're having trouble, I mean, we saw at the PPP, a lot of smaller businesses were having trouble with their banks, and we were trying two or three different ways to get through, and some of them were just overwhelmed. And then we have relationships with other banks and said, hey, you know, if you're having trouble, call someone so they can help you. So we have relationships with a lot of people. When they have relationships that work well, that's great. Maintain those. When if it doesn't, we have a couple of people we could call. If your rate for refinancing comes in at X and we could get it a half a point better, we could have that discussion whether or not it makes sense. But even with accountants, I have people, they say, listen, Ken, I want you to do my tax. I've been with my guy 30 or 40 years. He's going to retire soon. I said, great, stay with him till he retires. If you're happy with him, give him your business. When he retires, there'll be plenty of work for me. Don't worry about it. So I'm blessed. Our business, we have enough. I don't need to chase everyone. I don't need to say, tell me you're done. Who cares? He's going to retire in a year or two. Nah, we have professional courtesy. That's fine. You're happy. You served you well for 30 years. If he's going to hang out for another year or two, great. Then when he retires, you come to me.
You are a nice person. I can tell that. And it's a pleasure talking to someone who is just a greedy individual who wants to just... all I hear is you saying, whenever it's good for you, the client, do it. Whenever it's good for you, the client. And you keep saying that in so many different ways. And I respect you tremendously. I don't know you, but I respect you. And by the way, you have a great view. Where is it? It's like a room in your house here?
Yeah, we bought a house last year. We have a little screened-in porch off to the side. And, you know,
you have a nice wooded lot, don't you? Is this all?
Yeah, my backyard, side yard. So it's good. One of my partners, the guy I started working for when I was in high school, we owned a four-family. And I lived there for about 7 years. And last year, my wife and I bought a house to kind of split our commute. She was traveling pretty far. So I used to have our own house. But it was interesting living with other people. I still have other rental properties. But that was one of the things I saw and working from, just the way he managed his work, his life, his investments. And it made a lot of sense. So I think there's things like that you get working with people that are CPAs. I think when you go to work, you want to find someone that you work well with. You're not going to learn what you need to just in your education, whether it's 120 hours, 150 hours, whether you're CPA and EA, whether you don't have degrees. You need to find someone that is educated, smart, that believes in you, and that wants you to succeed. I mean, I learned a lot in school. I mean, I went to UConn, phenomenal. I have my master's from Notre Dame, even better.
Oh, you have a master's from Notre Dame. Oh, very good.
You know, it took me a little while to pass my CPA. Some medical issues. I had to stop. I had to start again. I was almost 30. I couldn't believe it. Since I was 16, the CPA was the be-all to end-all. And I passed two parts. I got sick. I needed surgery. I had a complication a year later. I needed another surgery. And it got derailed. I had to start all over from the beginning. People said, why don't you ask for a waiver? I said, that's not me. I said, I was just going to start over. That's fine. I understand if you have medical issues, you need waivers. I said, I'm going to do it just like everybody else. And I did. It almost took me to 30. But at our firm, you don't sign a tax return until you're a CPA, not just a CPA, until you have the experience to really understand how much is involved with the tax return. I know a lot of people say they do tax returns. There's a lot there, not just preparing it, but planning it and checking things. So there's a lot. It means a lot at our firm when you're able to sign a return. And I was just getting to the point where if I didn't have my CPA, I was starting to get the experience to be able to sign a return. I couldn't. And it just devastated. You know, those things matter. And I think there's a lot with the initial CPA. I think that there's a level of trust, a level of ethics. Your school, a lot of things say things about you. And just having a discussion with you, I have these with clients, I have these with potential clients, and I think people could tell really quickly if you're genuine, if you believe in them, if you have their best interest at heart. Not everybody takes my advice, not everybody goes to me, not everybody wants to deal with somebody that's on the up and up. It's funny, when we do tax returns, I think people think we're the IRS, we're connected, and if they could fool us, then they get then they pass. And I always say, I'm not going to audit all the documentation you give me. If you say you gave $750 in charity, I believe that. That makes sense. You make $150,000. That's reasonable. But if you say I gave $35,000 last year, I said, we should discuss where it went. I need to see those receipts. I just, that's a little bit of a high number.
Yeah.
Same thing with businesses. When they start to push the envelope a little bit, it's like, you know, we need to discuss what ordinary and necessary is. It's not clearly defined, but there's some examples and some court cases of what's not. And I think that's the hardest part of coming out of school. People look at me and say, don't you just look up the tax code? It gives you the answers. So that's how it's defined. Then there's gray areas, and then people challenge it, and they see what's going to stand and what's not. And some people like to push it a little bit more. They understand that there's opportunities, and they use it. I mean, I'm still surprised they changed the meals and entertainment to 100%. They want to help COVID businesses. And in my heart of hearts, I've been in practice for a while. You can never do 100%. And I understand it's before COVID, and people have normal and ordinary and necessary, and that's permitted. So I have to get a little bit more comfortable that people are going to do some meals and entertainment, and it's all for good reasons, as long as there's a business purpose. So I think we're conservative by nature, but I think
entertainment is no longer deductible. Am I correct?
Yeah. Entertainment is not. Meals is back to 100%. You're correct.
I didn't mean to critique you. Please.
No, it depends. You can still have office parties for your staff and deduct that 100%. So we have to define entertainment, but yeah, taking clients out, that's no longer permitted. But yeah, so meals is 100%, and these rules change constantly. So we'll see how long that lasts for, but I think it's more of a reaction to COVID than anything. And it's good to see people get back to business. But when you're learning the experience and seeing the people above you and how they handle themselves, how they conduct themselves, how they deal with difficult situations, because as a public accountant, you get a lot. And I know the five CPAs, we talk all the time. Oh, somebody came in and this is the transaction that's about to happen. Have you seen this? No. Have you seen this? Yes. So, oh, good. So tell me about that experience. So when you have a firm with five CPAs, it's great, especially having a CPA in their 70s and 60s and 50s and a couple in their 30s. We get to see the whole gamut. And some people might have read an article about it. Some people haven't. Some people did some CPE about it. Some people haven't. But you want to have knowledgeable people. You can't be the jack of all trades. You can know a little bit about everything, but you do have to specialize. And you have to be able to say, it's not my area of expertise. I think you need to talk to someone who it is. And sometimes you do have to turn away business. But you know when you get into it, you're not really serving a client. If you don't understand, maybe they have a foreign business or something. You haven't dealt with that. Or their overseas tax return, foreign income exclusion under tax return. I haven't seen that. I'm not comfortable. And I don't want to shortchange you. I don't want to shortchange me. It's not fair to any of us. So there's a lot of things that you learn in practice. So if you have someone that has been around, they've been there, they're well respected, they know what they're doing, and they're willing to train you, that's no reason why to get up and go to work and want to go to work every day.
Thank you so much for listening to Yeager's CPA Review and More. As a token for our appreciation for your listenership, we'd like to offer you 10% off your next purchase with Yeager's CPA Review. Save between $50 to $150 with code PODCAST10. If you'd like more information, look us up on JaegerCPAReview.com. And as always, if you've enjoyed this show, please rate and review on iTunes or your preferred listening platform. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to you tuning in next time.